Everyone has a group chat, but why is it still so hard to split the cost for gifts or festival tickets or travel? You're constantly chasing people to pay you back and often get left holding the bill. PaySquad is on a mission to make it easier to do stuff together. We're building simple, easy group payments that exist right at checkout. I'm Cam Richardson, the founder. Check it out at paysquad.co and find me on LinkedIn. Let's dream big, buy now, and pay together.
Hello and welcome to Funny Business. I'm Rob.
And I'm Locke. You forgot to do the intro. What are you saying? A little bit of funny, a little bit of business. What, did you get a bit of stage fright?
No stage fright. We're toying around with a few different intros. I still haven't landed one I really like because I'm trying to sell a message, but Funny Business is just funny business. You're here because you get the best information and the best way you can be delivered. You know, it's like, let's be real. Imagine going to listen to a boring business podcast all the time to get the same information you get here with a bit of humor.
I like that because on today's episode, we've got a big banging guest for it. It's Ben Fisterer from Zala, co-founder, doing some good things there. And I've got to say, I was a bit nervous before this chat because this guy's moving and shaking. And I feel like he's so obsessed with doing the hard work, isn't he? He's loving it sick.
Fastest growth, breaking the records for the fastest growth, doing the coolest things. And yeah. He was a real dude. And I know we like saying that as an example on these intros. We always say, they're the real deal. But
so authentic. What an authentic chat.
I feel like maybe that's just what we're attracting at the moment. You know?
We can't help it. It's cliche because it's true.
Go check out this episode, and if you like it too, I usually say this at the end of the episode, but if you do listen to Funny Business all the time, you haven't gone and checked out our new newsletter that's popping out, go and do that now, Dream Big Social Club on Beehive. But other than that, send this episode to a friend that you think would get some value out. It doesn't cost you anything. Just hit that share button. It helps us out a long way if I get my words out. Anyway, enjoyed the episode. Whatever. Bye.
That was quick.
Ben, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business podcast. For those at home listening, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Hey, Lockie. Hey, Robbie. You're Ben Fisterer, co-founder and CEO of a company called Zala. We're basically trying to rebuild the way business banking operates in Australia and then globally. So, we're a startup that started. We kind of got together, I think, 3.5 years ago, launched 2.5 years ago. And, yeah, basically trying to build solutions for Aussie businesses so they can have a better solution than traditional business banks and also bring together all the different fintech type innovations and tech solutions that they'd otherwise use to complement the lacking solutions in banking and actually bring that into one single solution so they can run their businesses, scale their businesses better, and generally take a bit of stress out of financial management.
Well, mate, we're absolutely stoked to have you on the show today, and we're going to be extra conscious because you picked up before the chat, before we hit record, that I've got not a resting bitch face, but a resting listening face, and I've got to make sure that I pay you the respect and show that we are
super. Look into the eyes, mate.
Look deeply into your soul and tell you that we're stoked to have you on the show, mate. But hey, if we rewind back a little bit, we'd love to get into your background into the world of business. How did you end up doing what you're doing in the first place? Is this something as a kid when you're growing up you thought, fuck, I'm going to be a fintech founder and take over the business fintech world?
No, it definitely wasn't that. Obviously, fintech wasn't a thing. I think when I have, not that I do it often, when I look back on my career when I was young, I always had that entrepreneurial side. I think I always used to have side hustles growing up through uni, even when I used to have my early jobs, which were completely not satisfying me at all. I always did entrepreneurial side hustles and things like that. So it's always been in me. But I guess when you grow up, you don't, either you're really naive or you just don't have that worldly view that you don't understand what is the potential you could do in terms of starting businesses, how you can scale and how big they could be and what areas are. But no, I jumped around my career heap. So certainly didn't sort of grow up thinking I was going into financial services, let alone fintech, no.
What were some of the side hustles that you had going back in the day?
They're probably a little bit normal. I did the same thing like everyone does, like washing dishes and stuff like that. But I used to build websites for people on the side. When the sort of dot-com boom started, I don't know if you remember, you're definitely too young for this, but there were things called portals. So portals were like the gateway to this new thing called the internet. So I was building different portals for industries and stuff like that. I've done the other standard stuff like renovating houses, doing property on the side, all that sort of stuff. But then you get to a point in your career where actually things are really hard at work. So side hustles become harder and harder. But yeah.
What about taking on opportunities? I feel like this is a big common theme we have with people who come on the pod who achieve things or get
some good sort at of, what they're doing.
Good at what they're doing. Yeah. And for you, like going through and us like doing our research with this chat, feels like you have had a broad experience across a bunch of different stuff, but it always seems like you're interested and ready to take on new challenges and make stuff happen. Is that a fair summary?
That's a very glowing summary from an otherwise confused career. I think for me, coming out of uni, I just didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what I was supposed to do, what I'd be good at. So I kind of realized pretty quick I couldn't work out what I wanted to do. So the other theory was, let's just work out what I don't like doing. So I went to different companies, unfortunately blue chips to start, thinking that was a good idea, and just realized I don't want to be in this industry. I don't like this sort of culture. I don't want to work in this size company. And just kept jumping around till I started to narrow it down a bit and eventually come across this thing called tech and high growth industries and stuff like that and innovation to go, that's what I like. I also have no idea why, but I just like really hard stuff. Like the harder it is, the better. Like I don't want to go to work every day and just be bored. If it's not hard, I'm absolutely tapping out straight away. So the harder, the better. And what could be harder than taking on, you know, four massive Australian banks? So that's the theme. But yeah, no, there was definitely no straight path.
Is that your favorite part of the job? Like doing the hard things, like the bigger the challenge, the more exciting it is?
100%. It is for me, but the other best part of my job is now I had the privilege, we've got about 225 people, is just being surrounded by crazily talented people. I mean, that's my number one thing, is that when you hire someone that is exceptionally talented, great at what they do, and they produce incredible results and help sort of lift this whole dream that the co-founders have into reality, like that is mind-boggling. And often you find yourself going, I'm just so inferior to this person, they're amazing. But yeah, when those people say, hey, I want to put my career behind what you guys are doing, that's humbling and awesome to watch as well. But that's the number one thing that inspires me. And just ultimately also when you see customers use your product, that's just mind-blowing and really, really cool.
In doing some of our research, heard you chatting around what it takes to have that team and culture to work in an environment that allows this crazy growth and crazy scale.
Team's your middle name. You love this.
I love it.
You wake up thinking about it.
And bringing people together. But I feel like the human element of successful companies is a really underrated thing that everyone talks about, the stuff that they're doing and the space that they're playing. But I've definitely heard you talk passionately about what it means to build the right team. Can you go into a little bit about your experience scaling that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a firm believer that 99.9% of the chance of success is down to the people you hire and you surround yourself with. It's just a fact that humans build things, humans build businesses. So, or today they do anyway, without getting to AI. I think, and if you get that right, it's absolutely amazing to be able to keep growing a business with incredible people around you. And I know I couldn't do it. I absolutely couldn't do it. In terms of culture building, I'm a little bit negative on it because I work for a range of different companies, and the obvious one, which was a San Francisco based one, which I worked at last. I just didn't buy into the fabricated culture slogans and mission statements and things like that. I found it a bit disingenuous. And I, broadly speaking, when you see companies are really strong on that stuff, they seem to be a bit disingenuous, and when you learn more about them, they don't really hold those values true. So if you're going to put them up on a whiteboard or put them on a neon light or whatever, you've got to have to work really, really hard to stay true to it. So I kind of dumb it down a bit and just basically say, listen, just hire good people who are super talented and super hungry at what they want to do. Surround them with other good people. Treat them well. Super cliche, but do things that you'd want done to you, and just be a good person and be open. And I know it sounds cliche, but I think if you do that, that's number one thing. The other part of it is just we are unapologetically a hardworking company. And I just have a firm belief that not every company has to be the same. So not every company is going to suit every type of personality. So we just want to be upfront with what we do. We have got an amazing, unique privilege and opportunity to build Zella. And it comes with a lot of capital, a lot of investment, a fantastic starting point, a lot of growth. But the only way we're going to get it done and take it to the next level is just working really hard. So that doesn't mean work 24 hours a day, but when we're working, we work hard and we look after each other and we make sure we inspire each other to work even harder. So yeah, just being transparent with what your culture is from that perspective. And I think that the people that come and say, well, that's not really what I'm about, my life stage is different, that's totally fine. But other people go, yeah, this is what I want. This is the platform I need to boost my career and learn from others. And they absolutely love working at Zella. So yeah, just being true to who you are as a company and a person, I think, is probably the number one thing.
I reckon it's been a weird thing to observe the last few years and watching, I guess, the change of the amount of funding coming into different companies and the whole startup space and the movement of people and jobs available going on. I feel like we covered it. We did a series with Seek back in like a year and a half ago, which is called about the great jobs boom. And then all of a sudden the air got sucked out of the room, and the opportunities that people were moving more freely into, where they were like crazy perks and companies were offering this shit like, hey, 4-day work weeks and you can, or 3-day, you know, like it's like this stuff for us, it's like
come in one day every month.
We're bootstrap founders. We've been doing what we're doing and we work like all the time. And to hear the expectations versus it didn't feel like a real life for a lot of people, but there's so many scenarios where different people were being provided opportunities like that where they thought they had to do it to get talent. Yep. You know, but I feel like your approach is like, no, fuck that. This is a real place. If you want to come here and do real work with real people and cut your teeth by getting the wins on the board in a successful environment, that's going to set you up for life. It's a trade-off thing where, I don't know, did you see much of that yourself?
No, absolutely. It's like 21 to 23, probably short of 23, but... I absolutely felt like we were swimming against the tide. And I, to be honest, I reflected and thought, maybe I got this wrong. Like everyone's offering this, like work less, do less, more perks, more pay. And I was like, I just don't know. Like, because I do believe in economic cycles and this thing's not going to last forever. And if it turns and I've overpaid way too many people and we've got this massive obligation of, you know, perks and benefits that are excessive, like we certainly have them at Zella, but if they're excessive and we've just spent too much money, like this is not going to last forever, and how are we going to get through it afterwards? So we were always pretty realistic, and we like to think we pay well, we have good benefits and that sort of stuff, but we never got carried away with it. And I think that now that it's turned, it's kind of validated it. But that said, like the other thing that kind of annoys me, like I'm talking about my theory on this sort of stuff, and I have to say this is just my theory. Like I'm not saying I got this right. I'm not saying if I had a control experiment for Zella and ran it totally different, I could have been doing it better or worse. I just don't know, right? But so everyone should just do their own thing, and every company should run it the way they feel best. And what will happen is they'll attract a certain type of person, which they'll like to attract, and we'll attract a certain like that works for us. And that's okay. It's totally fine. I find it really weird where, and I used to work at companies which I didn't like. I hated it. Some of them depressed me. Some of them just thoroughly didn't like working there. But I never thought, oh, this company should change for me. Like it was a weird concept. It was just like, no, this company is not for me. I'll find a company that is for me. So, and as an individual, I think too many people think that the company should change for their whim, but every person wants something different. So no company can be everything to everyone. So yeah, just getting that right, just back what you think is right and we do that, and it's working well for us, but inverse works well for others as well.
It's like the sports analogy, you know, like certain type of coaches are going to attract certain type of players who want to play and buy in for that coach. And I feel like businesses and startups and that, it's like it's the unspoken thing. I definitely feel like spot on what you're saying, where everyone can entitled to run it however they want or do what they want. But that definitely felt like from outside covering the stories going on, there's so much pressure for it's like to do this and change that. It's like, it felt like a lot of focus on the wrong stuff versus like build, like, you know, there's less noise about like building cool shit and doing it. It's like, you need to do more of this and change that. It's like, fuck, why can't we just do work
in the shadows? Like, you know,
I don't know. We can move on, but fucking whatever.
Yeah. I don't think people, like, I think when people find work that they love, it's such a cliche, it doesn't become work, whatever, but it's actually fun. So it's not like this negativity about working hard, I think, is ridiculous. I mean, if you're pushing people and driving people and making their life unhappy, that's not cool at all. But working hard on stuff you enjoy with people you like being around, it's the peak. It's what you want to do. It's, I think, generally is what most humans want to do. So, yeah, we just try to create a version of that.
What about, like, the responsibility of being a founder? You know, you've got all this stuff, you got all this stuff on your plate. Is that something you embrace, like the responsibility and thinking about that at night, like knowing that you got to build the business, you got to look after all these people, like there's so much attached to everything that you're doing. Like, how do you go about that?
Yeah, I don't subscribe to the leadership books or anything like that, but I love leading people. I love that responsibility. I love trying to navigate it and understand how I can get the best out of teams. Like that's a pleasure for me, and it's something I look craft that I'm totally always working on, trying to improve, and nowhere near the end game at all. So yeah, I absolutely enjoy it. In terms of the stress of it, yeah, now and again it dawns on you. I think when we hit milestones of hiring or growth or revenue, and you go, holy shit, like this is big. And when you look out, when we have all hands and we have, you know, a few hundred people there, it's like you can get a little bit philosophical about it, but it can hit you now and again where you go, wow, these are people who have trusted a part of their career with us. They've got families, they got dreams, they got mortgages, they want to travel, they want to do this stuff, and we're all responsible for that. So it kind of can freak you out now and again, but I love it. I love that challenge and that opportunity. And I really hope that everyone that works for us looks back at that hopefully very long part of their career, but that part of their career, and go, I loved what I was doing there and I had fun when I was working at Zella. So yeah, no, but it does, like when you look at making sure the business is constantly growing and you're keeping that real scrappy appetite, that culture to push products out and deploy things quickly and grow and, you know, chase further revenue, that it's all encompassing. It is. But yeah, I love it.
What about the early days of Zella? Can you go into getting it off the ground and what were the first like 6 months like?
Yeah, we got together as a team literally the first day of 2020. And it's been an absolutely crazy ride since then. So there's actually four of us. So Dominic Yap, Alfred Wong, and David Conn, and myself. And I kind of realized it when I was sort of bringing the team together that, listen, we're effectively building a multifaceted business bank or digital business bank. So, and payments business in one. So you can't do it yourself. You've got to absolutely bring together talent. And the fact that I could get those three to join in this crazy journey was like one of the best things, like definitely the best thing that we ever did, because they're genuinely good people. We've never had an argument. We've never had a scrap. They work phenomenally hard. They're way more intelligent than I am. So I love being inspired by them. And getting that right was amazing. And that was the start of 2020. It was just a whirlwind. The first week, I think I met with Paul Bassett from Square Peg, and they offered us a term sheet for plus Apex. So we got a term sheet for $6 million within, I think it was 3 weeks of even getting together. So it was like, okay, game on. We've got to go now. And we were super hungry. We knew what we wanted to do. We knew how we were going to do it. And then we put the capital in. So yeah, within January, we were like, okay, this is on, let's go. The others obviously quit their jobs. I was ready to go already. And then we just started building. Then COVID hit. And then we were effectively locked in, as we all were, locked in our houses for the longest period. What was it, 7 months or something? So we just literally had nothing better to do to build this business. So we worked phenomenally hard and we loved each other's company. It kept us sane. But yeah, I think without COVID, ironically, we wouldn't have been able to build what we built to launch within 14 months of starting. So it was absolutely crazy period for everyone in the world, but we were on top of that building effectively what would be a payments banking system from scratch. So it was crazy. Hired a lot of people through that first year. We did another raise midway through the year. So we just had more and more capital to do what we wanted. So it was a whirlwind that first phase, but because the world was crazy, it just felt normal as well. So yeah, it was good fun there.
What about the changes now that COVID is over, like building the company and like getting all these people coming on board and then building it like in the middle of, I'm sure, a dispersed team with people used to not have actually met anyone face-to-face? How has stuff like that changed and your thinking behind that now?
Yeah, generally thinking, I mean, this is all sort of the work culture thing. It's like I can easily mount arguments for remote work as an accounting person, so I'm not one of those people that say, well, this definitely works or this definitely works. So, yeah, obviously during COVID we were 100% remote and, yeah, literally Christmas party, so 1 year into it, most of us were meeting each other for the first time. It was super surreal and, wow, you're taller than I thought, shorter than I thought, whatever. But it was funny, this weird thing where we met at a pub and we came together and it's like meeting a stranger that you know incredibly well. I know that's like another thing, but you kind of go up to them and you're like, oh, hi, Ben. And then within 2 seconds, you're like, ah, our jokes, our personality, our work, what we've gone through together, this connection. So I think that made the initial team tighter than you probably ordinarily find. Generally, I think where we're at, 100%, as much as we can in person is way better, like absolutely way better. Like I see it every day here. And we have a general policy of 4 days in the office and then flexibility if you need a day off or whatever beyond that. But you see it with like team pockets of engineers and the product manager coming over to solve and designer comes in and has a chat and then they quickly go over to someone else to talk to, you know, risk and compliance about a product, and you're hearing laughing, you're hearing movement. Like it's just a joy to be around. So I'm 100% believer in that. But that's right for our point of scaling. I think long term, if you've you know, you're scaling up to thousands of people. It's not really practical to all be together. So you have to be dispersed, and the remote becomes a more valid option. But for where we're at, early stage, we have remote teams. So they're 100% part of our business and we love what they do. If we could have them with us, we'd prefer that as well, but we can't. So we get the most out of it. But yeah, people like interacting with people. Like, that's their human. That's human nature. Like, I just believe that they should be around each other as much as possible. So, but again, personal view.
It's like Locke and I. We like being around each other until we don't, you know?
Yeah, it gets to a point when we just don't talk, and then it's like we both know that we're sick of each other. We'll give each other a day, a Sunday maybe.
Maybe a Sunday, that'd be one.
But it's hard because we're always tossing it, because we love hard work too, you know what I mean? Like getting the to-do list done and knocking things off, and it's like when you're working with other people, it's like they might not have that same drive and hunger, but I feel like that energy, like I love that. Like I live off that. I feel like we don't play footy or anything anymore, but it's like a sport. You know what I mean? It's like we got to go. Like it's game day.
I'm sure you've had a bunch of chats with other founders who have gone on to do different things. Do you think there's common trends or traits around like what it takes to have a founding team that makes something happen?
Again, common theme with this chat, I think what works is for each other is up to that. But I think generally if you're realistic about the founding team, I think that's number one. Like if you're suddenly like speed dating and just grab some co-founders and say, well, I need a tech person, let's go, or I need a product person, let's go. More often than not, that doesn't work out. And, you know, you can get lucky and maybe it does. But, I put a lot of thought into the three others and whether it would work on a personal level, the dynamics and what they're wanting from it. And, you know, as things happen, if it goes wrong, like how would our dynamic be then? We'll be able to settle issues, we'll resolve things. You know, do I want to hang around with these people every day for many, many years and get that right? And which I think we did. So founding team is absolutely critical. I think you have to also be incredibly practical about what you're trying to do. I think if you go into it too naive, the upside of that is you don't get scared off by the challenges that'll hit you, but you will get hit with challenges you can't actually navigate. And also making sure as you scale, you constantly, this is the number one thing I'm going through at the moment, is like I've scaled teams and businesses before, and then that eventually something sort of goes wrong, and then you look back from a cultural or a hungriness and scrappiness, and you look back and you go, oh, that's when it changed. But it's really hard to notice at the time that it's changing. It's kind of little increments. So a big thing I'm trying to learn about now is like, are we still that same company, or have we evolved the direction we want to go? Are we moving as fast as we want? Have we got the right people? You know, am I performing the best that I possibly can? And just being that constantly thinking about that stuff and talking about it, I think is a really healthy thing to do, because sometimes you go, wow, we've actually veered off course a bit. Let's self-correct a bit. So, people that can do that, I think, is a good thing. But the cliche extra one is like, you got to enjoy it. Like if you don't enjoy what you're doing, it's just not going to work. So.
I love it. Hard things, like you got to, if you waking up every morning to go to work and smash things out, it's got to be fun. You got to make it fun. I feel like we sometimes even try and force the fun, you know, where we put things in place where it's like things are going to be hard. We need to at least make some time in the day where it's like a bit lighthearted.
Just fake smile at each other. Yeah.
But that's like, that like jump starts it, you know?
Totally. We have that. Zoe and I try to kind of lead by an example that where the start of meetings, we just kind of, just have a chat and we just muck around. And I think when you get leaders or managers or people that try to take it too seriously or project their image that they're this sort of got all their shit together and they're all cool and calm, and I think that's rubbish and that comes unstuck. So yeah, I don't want to be serious all day, but I do believe in the philosophy, and it's a simple one, but just having two gears, like, and everyone knowing that we're all got two gears. Like when we're having fun, let's have a laugh. But when we've got to get stuff done, like let's just all click and don't have a scenario where someone's going, hey, let's have fun now. When we've got to get stuff done, it's getting serious. It's like, I think good teams, you see it. Like, do they click in and click out of those modes really, really easily and seamlessly? Because this stuff's hard and you've got to keep pushing. You've got to get it right. So, but yeah, go have fun. Because it's up and down. Humans get happy, depressed, good days, bad days. And expecting to be just that monoline is just not practical.
From a growth perspective, how do you guys look at goal setting? You know, you had some crazy growth to date from when you launched in 2020, hit these crazy milestones that no one sort of hit before. And then you go, well, how do you tackle taking in that data set from, fuck, we've ticked off this stuff before. How do we set realistic expectations to plan? Or like, that must be a tricky thing to plan moving forward, knowing like there's so much variable, like, can this keep growing? Is it the same pace? What do we need to make that sustainable? Like you mentioned before, if we hire a bunch of people, we have to get rid of them, and it also has implications. Like, can you go into a bit of that?
Yeah, we're by nature, I think we're all quite analytical and data driven, but I've also learned firsthand that you can waste too much time pontificating and planning and projecting what you could do when you, most businesses actually, until they're into like a mature run rate, you don't actually know. And the only thing that's going to get you to this point is not doing a nice Excel spreadsheet about it. It's actually getting the stuff done. So we do, you know, we've got an amazingly small, effective finance and strategy team, and they do an incredible job of planning, like incredible job. Their projections are always really, really close to where we're trying to get to, but we don't also look too far ahead. It's like, okay, well, the data points we know we can probably get this range, and if we stretch, we get to that, let's get it done. But ultimately, it stands like, all right, just put that aside, let's just get on with it and get it done and build as much as we can. And I think if you waste a lot of time and sap people's energy and, you know, commitments to actually focus on planning too much, you can overplan and just not execute enough. So very strong on that. In the short term, like when the projections and the data we share with our investors and our team internally, very, very heavy and very accurate, and a lot of analytics go into it, but we don't go beyond that. It's like, I don't want to know the types of products we're going to launch in 2 or 3 years. And I remember one VC I spoke to criticized me for that. I didn't have a big enough dream in the long term. And I was like, but I'd be making it up. Like I can make something up to make it sound like, you know, we're going to democratize democracy or something, but I'm not going to, it's just silly. It's like, listen, I know what I'm going to deliver in the next 12 months and I got a lot of work to get that done. The medium horizon, I have a very good picture of what we could do, but I want to be nimble. I want this company to move. I want to change. I want to evolve, to react to competition, to opportunity. And I want to look back in 5 or 10 years and go, I never expected this company to do this or that, or wow, look where we ended up. But if you say, okay, that's the only thing we're going to do in 10 years, then you probably end up there and it'll probably be wrong, or it'll be very boring along the way as well. So,
lessons then for if founders are out there trying to raise capital, about having honest conversations with investors?
I know there's other people saying about a few famous quotes about not being honest to investors, but I'm the inverse of that. I'm 100%. Like, warts and all, this is what it's going to be. I'll tell you the good and the bad. And if you want to come along for this ride, like, you got to know about it. What I don't want to have to do is I lie about something or project something that's unrealistic and then have to have an incredibly awkward conversation and, you know, the relationship sours because I've misled them. So no, absolutely, 100%, warts and all, This is where we're going, but also let me do it as well. Like, you've actually invested in me. You're backing the team that I'm building and the vision that we're trying to build. So just give me the space to do it, and, you know, don't take up too much of my or the other team's time, you know, asking questions that aren't really adding value. If you've got concerns or questions or what, absolutely, just call me any day. But, also give us the space to get it done. But no, transparency is by far the better way for me.
What about, like, in terms of strategy? I feel like you love it, like thinking about different ways to make stuff happen. Like strategy, like I see your background is in strategy and stuff, and in fintech and money and stuff. I just feel like, do you have any people that you look up to in terms of like great thinkers and stuff?
I'm a little bit negative on this stuff. God, you're gonna make me go places I shouldn't, but I think humans are immensely complicated things. So you rarely find people who are like the perfect species and, wow, I'm going to model everything I do. I tend to find little things with people that I go, I've never seen that before. That's incredible. You are so good at this or this. And that inspires me. Like Sarah Fryer, for example, the ex-CFO of Square and now the CEO of Nextdoor, a social media platform, a big one in the US. And she taught me the ability to help anyone at any time. And like, she was like super powerful, successful. I think she was voted Businesswoman of the Year in the US. Pretty good title. But like, if you messaged her, she would message you straight back. When I was thinking what to do next, I was trying to work out what to do. And I thought, I wanted to say it really hard. This is before we thought of Zeller. And I was like, and there was this concept of flying cars, so what were called eVTOLs, electronic vertical takeoff and landing or something like that, but they're like taxis, like air taxis, and Uber Air was going to do it, and I was like, now that's hard, I want to do that. Like, I reckon I don't think there's much harder things you could do. And I was talking to her about that, and the next day the CEO of Uber emailed me and said, oh, Sarah said you're having a chat, but then I'd love to have a chat to you. I was like, what? So anyway, I was like, that human nature, she was never too big for anyone. I love that. I took that away from working close to her. Working with Jack Dorsey, I think the number one thing I took away from him, his storytelling and his gravitas that he could build with teams. Like, yeah, you go in a room with him when he's talking. I don't know if he's a fan of your podcast, but if he was, then he might be a bit rude about this. But he's a little bit of a nervous guy, which a lot of people are, we all are. But when he starts talking about his dreams and his vision, he kind of settles into it. And then he's like, it's a bit dramatic, but he's almost spellbinding. Like, he's like, first room I saw him talk to about 200 people, and everyone was just like kind of mouths open, eyes open, just 100% transfixed at what he was saying. And I remember going, I've worked at a lot of companies. I've never seen an Australian CEO or general manager that had the room absolutely in the palm of their hand. So I took that from him and said, wow, I don't think I can just do that. But having a little bit of that ability to build a narrative and a storytell and take people along for this journey, I thought I've got to get a little bit of that. And then other thing is probably people that have worked for me, and some do, so, but I mightn't name them. But their work ethic, like, that for me is like, whoa, like, I got to lift my game. I got to meet their standards. So, I get inspired by that all the time.
That's crazy. You're going to build the Jetsons cars. You know, you want to be out there and flying. We could be crazy, this chat now.
Yeah,
but hey, a few flying vehicles sponsor the pod, no stress.
What other stuff? Ironically, it actually fell apart. Like, the technology's still there and it'll eventually get deployed, but the Uber, everything fell apart. And Melbourne was going to be the first city. I think someone else got the job. So, but yeah, that would have been really cool. But stupidly hard. Like, how do you convince neighbors to put landing pads on top of buildings and that it's safe to get in? Yeah.
Cool. Definitely will. We get there at some point, though, won't it? Flying car. We're going to get to see that.
I won't get my license. It took me like 10 years to get my actual P. So it might take me how long? Everyone, 30 years to get my.
Everyone's plane license. Locke's friends and family is for like anyone that's close to him. He has like 12 years worth of giving him lifts.
And I wanted to get a motorbike because I'm like, I don't have to get. No one will want to get on the back of it. You know, I owe so many lifts.
Hey, what about other stuff that you're into outside of like? Other industries, other things that you're passionate about, things that you're learning about?
Nothing too special here, but for me, I love sport. I got kids, I love watching them play sport, but I love, you know, Premier League, I love NBA, I love AFL. Watching all that, I actually do get a little bit sucked into your point before about the, you know, learning from coaches and things like that, and just seeing how different coaches and team managers and cultures have been built. To find that fascinating. I don't know how much I take from it, but it's really interesting space to look at. But if on a Sunday or something, if I can go to an awesome pub and have a good meal with friends and have a bottle of red or something like that, like, I'm in a happy place there. I used to be more into this. I'm not so much now, but a lot of the work I did early on wasn't really tangible, or it was like, you know, it wasn't building real stuff. So it was like I had to complement that with building stuff. So that's why I liked renovating or building things. And so with my hand, like, something that I could actually do to see an output of. But now with Zella, I have to get that in spades. So I don't have to do as much of that. But, hanging out with friends, just relaxing and just tuning out a little bit is, that does it for me.
Who's your footy team? Who do you go for?
Oh, this could go a different way, this conversation. West Coast Eagles, actually.
They're good. They're not good, but I mean, they're a good club. They're good. I feel like strong clubs in the competition. It's Rich's club, I think, isn't it?
They stand for something. Their new stadium's crazy. The walkouts and the lights.
Yeah,
and
stuff.
It's pretty energizing.
The weird thing about it, and this is where I get a lot of shit for this, but I've actually never been to West Australia. So I've never been to the state. I'm not from there. I just, when I was young, I was in a German household. So we kind of followed a little bit of soccer more than anything, a little bit of football. Family friends came out from WA the year before they launched and gave me shiny medals and medallions and memberships, and being a little kid, shiny stuff's pretty cool. And so I'll follow this team. And then again, back early then, the only televised games were interstate games. So I got to see my team a lot and they did well and I got hooked. And then I'm an absolute number one mad fan and, yeah, weirdly a Melbourne person supporting a West Australian team. But of all the interstate teams, I think I chose pretty well, so.
Now we've had we had Juddy on the pod.
We had
Juddy on the pod. In my experience, one of the stories I love to tell is around, I played footy with Ben Cousins when he came to Richmond. So my first game on Richmond v Adelaide or whatever it was,
On the G.
Yeah, I was playing with Cuzzy. He was.
I like this little drop too. Just insert that. Just to make sure Ben knows that. Hey, I've played.
It's about me right now, Ben. We've had 40 minutes on you. And I know it's one of those things. He was at the end of his career. He'd obviously had some hard times or whatever, but he'd just come from that sustained success. I know there's a lot of stuff going on in the off season things and the extra culture around West Coast, but the fact that they had just that such a crazy team with Juddy and Cousins and just
Daniel Kerr,
you know, like Fletcher. Winning those, like having that success. Like I remember after my first game, he didn't have to give a fuck about me. Like there's a bunch of people who played. He was one of the only people that messaged me. He was the only person that messaged me directly after my first game and said, "Great to play in the G today. Good stuff, whatever, Cuzzy." And I was like, two weeks ago, I was in hospital with a stomach thing. You know what I mean? Like, and he's still taking the time to do that. And it's like,
well, you're like, you come from a really, it sounds like people who actually give a fuck and know how to make people feel good, you know?
Yeah. Cause I mean, I'm guessing because I don't know the guy at all, but he's obviously went through some difficult times and he learned the importance of people that stood up for him. And so he probably went through accelerated learning. So coming out the back of that, he knows what it means to support others. So that's very cool. Did you give him a few tips on what he should do? And
No, when Juddy come on though, he said, "Remember when I bumped you?" And he's like, "You're a deck bro."
Yeah, he did. He didn't like that. But I did bump Juddy on the touchstone. He didn't like it.
I've almost forgiven him for leaving the Eagles, but I think best part of 10 years with JK up front kicking goals every week was a pretty good trade. So I'm pretty happy.
Good for everyone. And the Vizzy deal, he got a bit of cash. He was all right, wasn't he?
He loves it. It would be rude not to talk about just fintech as a space. Why are you passionate about this?
We've got a bloke in our world who fucking loves it.
We love it. We're working with a dude called Cam over from New Zealand. He's doing a thing called Pay Squad, which is like group payments at checkout. And he's such a passionate dude and you can just see the energy he brings, but the love for the space. And obviously talking to someone like yourself, we'd love to get into your thoughts itself on the whole industry and where it could go here.
Yeah, I think you can look at it different ways. And again, trying to avoid getting too philosophical, but I have looked back a little bit on this and I definitely didn't, not going to say I got into fintech because of the interaction between people and whatever, but the thing about fintech, it actually, we're all involved with it. Like everyone pretty much in society is a buyer and or a seller, right? We're all buying things, trading things, no matter who you are, you do that. So the fact that fintech is at the epicenter of all those interactions. So that's really cool. And it's never going to go away and it's always going to get more and more complicated. But the fact that it probably started about 15 years ago, it was really static and hadn't moved much or changed much. And then it just like, you know, chip cards, contactless, all this mobile, it went nuts. And so I was lucky enough to kind of get a taste of it early and then really get interested in where the innovation could go. And then sort of sunk my teeth into it, again, being a hard thing. But it constantly changes. It's so cool to get in that space. And it's, you know, when people talk about TAMs or addressable markets, it's almost infinite. It's always infinite because everyone's doing it. There's different niches. There's different opportunities popping up. It's really competitive. It's really hard. So I personally love the space. And I think a lot of people that get involved with it also have that awareness. You go, oh, this is pretty full on and fun. But yeah, where it's going, it's like I kind of got a little bit negative on fintech for the last few years because it seemed like too many businesses were coming into it and they weren't actually building anything substantial. They're actually putting like a wrapper on a BaaS platform. That's a banking as a service platform. Sort of calling themselves a neobank or calling themselves a bank. And it just wasn't going to last. The business models didn't stack up and stuff. So I think the correction, call it what you will now with tech, I think is sort of cleaned out a lot of those business models, and I think some of the best ones will still thrive. But I love it. It's constantly changing. It's never going to stay the same. And so it sounds like a good space for me.
Hey, mate. Well, we're getting to the pointy end of 2023 already. What's on for the rest of the year? What are you going to do for the Christmas break? You mentioned you got kids and a family. What does switch off time look like?
Before we switch off, it's like we're a product-led company and we most people here love building products and deploying features. So we're never going to have one product and just sit on it. So we're actually coming to another little crest in product deployment. So I think by the time this podcast comes out, we'll have deployed something that's called Tap to Pay on iPhone. So we're actually building that ability within our own Zella app, which already has invoices and transactions cards and cards, so businesses can get everything they need. They can now use their phone to act as a payment terminal. We're deploying something called Virtual Terminal. We've got new card products coming out. There's a heap of going out. So this next few months is really fun to be at Zella, like this product deployments. And hopefully you see and you guys can try a few of them. So that's, we've kind of got that in our sights for now. Yeah, I think at the end of the year, it's been a big year for the whole company, a really fun one and a very, very successful one. But yeah, we're really having a chat to the team about what each person wants to do in terms of unplugging, because it's super critical. So we're going to jump into an amazing next year as well. So hopefully recharging for that. Me, I'll be happy to spend time with the family and friends, get down to the coast a little bit, relax a bit, get away for a couple of weeks and just recharge. But yeah, I'm looking forward to next year as well.
Which part of the coast do you go down?
Mainly Mornington Peninsula. I think you guys are on the other side, right? So
yeah, we're on the other side. The dirty side, aren't we?
The dirty side. I know, it's been cold today, the last 2 days. Oh, I'm sure it's been cold down in Mornington, but they have like different type of winds, don't they? Sun shines over on that
the
side.
The sun shines always on that side.
One of my favourite places, my favourite place in Australia is definitely the south coast of New South Wales near Eden. So go camping there a lot, National Park area. But when I went to, and I kind of rode off Great Ocean Road saying, yeah, it's beautiful, but it's touristy, whatever. But then I went down to Wye River a few years ago in a sort of low season. And I was blown away. I was like, man, this is like the beach is beautiful. The waves were lovely. And just the pub there and having a beer looking over the top. I was like, okay, all right, this coast has got something. So I'm a convert to that side. Absolutely. I get it now. But yeah, Mornington Peninsula side for me because it's quicker to get to going from north, get down there. But yeah, they're all good.
Love it. I love it.
Well, mate, thank you so much for jumping on. And
I feel pumped.
Yeah, I feel pretty energized after this.
Make me want to do some work, you know. You just mentioned hard work all the time. Like, let's just put all the hard stuff on the list and do it. You know? Huh? Answer and do it.
They say let's put all the stuff, list them all up and do the stuff in the middle.
I had actually a look, and this is rude of me to say this. I didn't know more about you guys, but I knew your podcast. I had a look at your CVs. You guys are phenomenally entrepreneurial. Like, you should be flipping the microphone around. What are you doing? Like, I should be interviewing you guys. Like, it's crazy.
No, honestly, we throw a lot of shit at the wall and some things stick, you know, and we're just like, something's got to happen.
Well,
you know?
I like you saying nice things, Ben, so it's nice. I'm happy to end the combo, but if you want to
keep blow it, yeah.
I'll leave it there before we say anything wrong, right?
Yeah, true.
Ben Pfister, I'm not going to lie. I had a bit of trouble like pronouncing in my head before we had him on. I'm like, I'm not too sure how I'm going to say this. So I listened to a few pods and that's how they said it. So I'm glad I pronounced it right.
Hey, it's all I love when the outros are about you. It always...
Well, it is. I thought we asked good questions. You know, I know I mentioned earlier that I was a little bit nervous.
Rate your performance.
Chat, but I feel like we were pretty good. I thought he was good. I feel like he brought the heat as well. It was early podcast recording, you know, 9 a.m., which is new for us a little bit, isn't it?
Not that new at all. We did 7:30 a.m. So he was shocked to hear that we were doing live streams at 7:30 a.m. And he said straight up that you wouldn't have got me at 7:30. But we got you at 9, Ben. So thanks for coming on, mate. And it's great to meet you. And I hope everyone got lots out of this episode. And anyway, Locks, you hit the end of the record now. And I guess we'll talk to you later.
Hey, Cam, founder of PaySquad here again. Since bootstrapping a simple MVP in November, we've connected with hundreds of customers, added 7 merchants ready to integrate, forged a multinational partnership, and are ready to grow our squad with fresh faces and fresh capital. If you're interested in being a part of our journey through investment, strategic help, or heck, even getting into the trenches with us, reach out to me via LinkedIn or hit up any of the Dream Big lads. Let's help people pay together.